ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just one day after Jack McLennan's relationship fell apart, he vanished.
I couldn't believe this was happening.
Immediately, accusations started flying.
You need to cough up and you need to confess.
But it soon became clear there was so much more to the story.
There has to be something more nefarious going on.
I'm Rob Bergen. Join me as I investigate what became of Jack in the new season of Unravel.
You know where my son is.
Search for the Unravel podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Australia apparently always wanted second-hand US subs. That's the argument we've been hearing about the controversial AUKUS submarine swap, but not everyone in Labor ranks is buying it. Backbencher Ed Husic has pushed for a rethink of the agreement, while Nationals leader Matt Canavan says Labor's heart was never in the deal to start with. It comes as Australia and the Solomon Islands agree to begin negotiations on a comprehensive strategic agreement amid the rising presence of China in the region. And new national accounts figures are out, and while the Treasurer has labelled them very solid considering the circumstances, are households in for tougher times ahead? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm David Spears.
And these new GDP figures are hot off the press. The Treasurer has just ended his press conference, spinning the figures as positive, although I look at them and I think, looks like a sad economy to me. Australia's economy has expanded 0.3% in the first quarter of 2026. It is in line, however, with market expectations. David, the economic narrative from the government is actually it is overperforming given the international pressures.
PK, thank God for data centres, right? this is the data centre quarter that we're seeing, and hopefully we'll have quite a few more to come because they are doing a lot of the heavy lifting here. Jim Chalmers saying not all of the heavy lifting, but he acknowledges that's a big part of the story here. The boom that we are seeing, some have likened it to the mining boom from years ago, the big boom in investing in data centres in Australia right now. He points also to renewable energy and batteries playing a role. Point here is, the good news for Jim Chalmers is it's not public spending, not government spending that's doing the heavy lifting to keep us in positive growth territory. It is private sector investment, but then you're getting these questions. Well, is it all just thanks to the data centres? Is that going to be a flash in the pan for a year or two? Do we really have, once you take that away, a pretty sad story, as you say? Look, I think right now, you know, Jim Chalmers can say we're doing better than most comparable countries. We are in positive territory. 2.5% annual growth ain't bad. Look, and it, I guess it at least doesn't push up interest rates necessarily, this sort of figure. But, you know, would we like to see broader economic growth going on beyond data centres? Yes, I think is the answer to that. But this was a tricky quarter too, PK, don't forget. First 3 months of the year, we had two of the interest rate rises and the start of the Iran war. The next 3 months that we're still, well, we've just, we're still in until the end of June, that's obviously going to be a trickier quarter with the full impact of the oil crisis.
Okay, so it's, you're right, overperforming perhaps because of such low expectations and conditions. Let's accept that. But, you know, there's always devil in detail. The per capita GDP went backwards. You know, these are the real impacts, living standards going backwards, people feeling that sense of a downturn.
Yeah, household savings
down
a little bit.
And that matters enormously because, you know, you can be technical about two quarters backwards, that's a recession. Sure, that's the economic, you know, they're the economic rules, but that doesn't change the way people are feeling, and that's the bigger problem for the government.
And people were starting to freak out a little bit, right? People were starting to hoard fuel in the start of the Iran war, and the figures do confirm that that sort of essential spending increased largely on petrol, people filling up jerry cans back then, the great rush on the petrol stations, and the household savings ratio down a little. So, yeah, you saw the start of that impact of the Iran war, and then what we'll see in the current quarter will be interesting to see. But yeah, it's, look, you're right, the per capita GDP down a touch, but only a touch. And that does happen, as Jim Chalmers pointed out, usually once every four quarters. So, you know, it's we're not in recession, I don't think, by any particular measure. But look, it's not the strongest figure of all time, clearly, but enough there, I think, for Jim Chalmers to be able to make the most of it and say we've had strong business investment thanks to those data centres largely. We've had, a string of quarterly growth now in business investment, and that's easier for him to sell, I think, than having public spending being the one that's propping up the economy.
Oh, absolutely. Hands down. That's key. And that's why you saw him, almost had a bit of a bounce in his step because of that argument, because he's trying to cruel and destroy the argument of his opponents. Look, I want to dramatically pivot to the other big story of the week, and that's in relation to AUKUS and the fallout from a couple of things. The switcheroo from the one new, too old to now our new arrangement being three old subs or midlife subs rather than old. They're not completely in, a nursing home as subs, but they are certainly in middle age. And look, I'm in middle age and it's not always easy. So I'm wondering how these subs will go. Let me be more specific. Overnight in Senate estimates, the new Defence Secretary, Megan Quinn, received a bit of a grilling. The Greens Senator David Shoebridge queried how the original option was described as the optimal pathway if the second-hand subs were preferred. Now, I've got to be honest. I call it spade a spade, my
friend.
Here we go. I find the trickery, the government language trickery around this, infuriating and actually potentially even dangerous for public trust, especially on something so contentious. They tell us now this is always what they wanted. I think common sense and the way people's brains operate, you look at that and you think you really secretly always wanted the old ones. Really? Okay. They appear to be arguing it vigorously, even behind closed doors, that the reason we didn't know that they really wanted the old one is because that's not what the US wanted to offer. David, help me out here. Optimal? Is it optimal? Yeah. What's optimal? It's not optimal for my logic.
A couple of things. The linguistic gymnastics first. PK, can you have more than one optimal thing? Is it like the best thing? When you're looking at a menu, when you're ordering at a restaurant and there's the optimal meal, can you have two optimal?
I don't think so. Meals? Is it like preferential voting? Like you got your first preference, your second preference, and then there's
well, that
preferences
would be your optimal
flow.
And your suboptimal? Anyway, I'm getting bogged down on the language there, but that does look a little like retrofitting. And similarly, the argument. Look, in fairness, they were careful. I've been going back, trawling over everything they said in 2023 when the optimal pathway was announced, and they were pretty careful about, not spelling out very publicly that the plan was for two old and one new Virginia-class submarine. But it was there, right? If you look hard enough, it's there. And they're not pretending that it wasn't there. But they are now suggesting that actually, as you say, secretly, what they really wanted was, for simplicity's sake and cost sake, to have just the one model of Virginia-class submarine. And fair enough. But if they'd said that at the time, look, maybe this goes to the difficult dance they were doing with the US. And maybe the US preference was this back then and has changed now. But look, it's all a little bit unclear. And how much cheaper will this be? We don't know.
Mm-mm.
And of course, it comes right at a time when the pressure within the labour movement is starting to bubble up a little bit over AUKUS and, questions from Peter Garrett and so on around the nuclear waste in particular. And it's just come at a difficult moment for the government. Not that I think this in any way is going to see the government change course. I think it's, yes, we can talk about what's going on in the labour movement, but the government's course is set. And I do think we are at a point, now I've even spoken to strategists who are critical of AUKUS, who are now saying, well, we might be too late down this pathway. Where else would you get another submarine in time to replace the Collins class? You can't just, pop down
can't
the Bunnings
chop
and buy
change
one.
Change every couple of years. It's not the way you make.
No, and so we're kind of locked into this now. At least we get the first of these Virginia-class submarines in 6 years, in 2032. So, maybe it's too late. I don't detect the government's going to change course, but it's a bit of a difficult week for them on it.
It is a difficult week, and of course spearheaded by the Ed Husic intervention in caucus, where he raised this idea that they should have another vote on this question. And then, he went out publicly, didn't confirm it was him, but it was obvious. And, we've confirmed it, of course, with others that that was the case. interesting sort of, I feel like the gloves were more on than usual in punching back on Ed Husic. Now,
yeah, that's a good observation, history. Actually.
Yeah, I do. I feel just like on this issue, he's kind of crossed a red line for many in the Labor leadership and beyond. So on previous issues, okay, so he was dumped as industry minister on the backbench, been outspoken on many issues, as we know, as a regular on my show Afternoon Briefing. He, you know, like he breaks ranks regularly, I think, on many issues, mainly though, to be fair, around issues around Gaza.
Yep.
And also some of his old portfolio issues in industry, particularly
gas
you know, and
company
also
tax in years gone by. There's a long list.
And watch that space. He's already said a bit, but more on AI, right? You know, he's more of a sort of regulate kind of guy, guardrails kind of guy, and they've gone a bit sort of, you know, let's have some restrictions, but not too many. Let's let the AI boom happen without much. So that's the backstory. Then he goes hard on AUKUS, and quite hard, and I reckon the muscling up from the Labor leadership has been much more intense. So Mark Butler used this line, which I thought was pretty, didn't miss, saying these concerns are just one backbencher out of a caucus of 120. Boom, you know, assassin. Penny Wong seemed rather unconcerned, saying it's the capability that matters. She's a bit more subtle. And then I heard Pat Conroy too, and he was quite specific about his critique as well. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's a shift here.
No, I think you're right to note that. And maybe it's just, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of Ed Husic, you know, pressing the government on various things. But maybe it's also on this thing, AUKUS, of all things. This is something that we know has great political sensitivity for Labor. Any suggestion that they're weak at the knees on this or not all in, it's why Anthony Albanese jumped in favour of this within days of Scott Morrison announcing it leading up to an election. They know that they can't be seen to be wobbly on AUKUS. So I think that might explain a little bit of the pushback at Ed Husic. But let's lean into the submarine puns here a little bit, PK. This little bit of caucus discontent has been below the surface for quite some time. And it's not a big number, but Ed Husic is not the only one. I've also spoken to other Labor MPs. I'm only talking about a small number who do have concerns but aren't willing to go as public as Ed Husic did. So he's kind of popped the periscope up this week on this issue. I don't think it's going to torpedo the whole AUKUS thing. Have I thrown enough submarine puns in there? I'll stop. But you get what I'm saying.
Going, it's really. We've got all day.
It's not going to bring this ship down, but it's just that little bit of, and let's see what happens at the Labor conference.
Where there might be choppy waters.
There might be choppy waters.
Labor conference will be.
We'll stop now.
Yeah. That's next month. Base is activated on this. Some unions are activated too.
Yeah.
In terms of the job implications.
Well, I don't know if you saw, I had Sally McManus on last night on 7:30, and she just would not take a position on AUKUS. You know, I said flat out, are you for it or against it? You know, where do you stand? We don't have a position. Thing is, you got some unions who are really anti-AUKUS, some unions that are really pro-AUKUS, so maybe the ACTU is in a bit
like
of a tricky
position.
I'm just
sitting on the fence here.
Sitting on the fence. But, you know, they're a pretty big player in the Labor movement, and they're not taking a position on this, which gives you a pretty big insight into the sensitivity within the Labor movement around this. I mean, this is the biggest defence project of all time for Australia, and the ACTU won't back it. They won't bag it, but they won't back it. I don't know. It's interesting.
It is. So watch that space, because I think there'll be a few Barneys on this, and Ed Husic will be supported by the anti-AUKUS unions at least. And, you know, that's his base for sure.
They may not even get a debate on the conference floor. I think it'll be interesting to see if that gets managed away and
they are currently
avoided.
Trying to manage it. That's exactly what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
That is actually actively being
I mean, at the end of the day, PK, you agree with me, do you, that there's no chance they're walking away from AUKUS?
No,
can you absolutely imagine?
Not.
There's not.
Hands down, no.
No.
For a few reasons. One is obviously, you know, locked in and loaded. I think, you know, Richard Marles, who's the defence minister, is a genuine AUKUS lover. Like, he's, I don't think he's like faking it, you know what I mean? Just to get through the politics. That claim by Matt Canavan that, you know, Labor's never had their heart in it. Well, some absolutely have never had their heart in it. There's no doubt about that.
But Richard Miles has. And he did the heavy lift. Like, sure, the Morrison government did the original deal. But in terms of these Virginia-class submarines, that came after Labor won. They sat down, worked out how we're going to do this. We can't wait till the 2040s to get these AUKUS submarines that the British and the Aussies are going to make. We need something for the 2030s. Mm-hmm. And it was Richard Miles and, you know, the defence establishment that were negotiating this that came up with the Virginias as the bridge until we get those AUKUS submarines that we're going to build in the 2040s. So, yeah, he's got a huge amount of ownership of this.
He has a huge amount of ownership and just like true believer in AUKUS, in the US alliance and all of those things. Like he's on those issues, you know, obviously right-winger and Labor and kind of ideologically, I think, very much aligned with that sort of worldview history.
And do you think the shift from we're getting two used and one new sub to we're getting three used Virginias is a fundamental change in the way that Ed Husic is saying, well, they now need a whole new caucus vote on it?
Or is it a change?
It is a change.
But I think the word fundamental, you know, I don't think it's any more seismic than other sort of shifts we've seen along the pathway. However, I think the government's explanation of it is rubbery. Like, I'm not, even if it's true, I can't prove to you that it's not. It sounds weird, you know. Also, you know, if I can labour in its third day of the podcast of the week, Monday, Tuesday, now Wednesday, I'm doing the same thing, my Toyota Corolla argument. Sometimes when you do have the older version, it is easier to, you know, maintain it. Like, you know, you don't have the kind of new problems with the car that's beeping at you all the time. So I can understand, you know, the new ones just beep and yell at you all the time. But if you've got an older model, sometimes.
I don't know what sort of Corolla you're getting. They're beeping at you?
No, well, that's the older ones are just, I'm just saying, more reliable. You know how to, you know, I understand the argument about when they're at the middle of their life.
It's comfortable.
Yeah. Yep, I get
broken
that.
Broken in.
So it might be true.
Maybe,
but either way, the argument has, I think, been incoherent back to that point. Back to your point about, though, the question you've asked, is it fundamental? Well, no, I don't think it's fundamental, but it gives some entry into re-raising and relitigating this issue. And, you know, I think the Trump administration's treatment of us looking like we are a little weak in those negotiations, we sort of say, they say jump and we say how high. That's the vibe of this relationship. And that's the broader point I think probably Ed Husic is also pointing to.
And let's just note too that this is a bit of choppy water this week, but there will be more turbulent seas ahead when we look at the British shipbuilding problems. They are significant. And still the US getting their production rate up on time to be able to do all of this. Yeah, there are still there's still the potential for more problems ahead, I think.
Absolutely. Now, on kind of an adjacent theme, I think very much another thing has happened today that I think is quite meaningful. The Solomon Islands' new Prime Minister is in Australia for his first overseas trip. He and Anthony Albanese have stood up today. They've had a press conference. Two big announcements that I think are very significant. One of them being negotiations to begin a new bipartisan security treaty.
Yep.
And the Solomon Islands China security deal is going to be reviewed. This is very good news for Australia.
Absolutely.
And our influence in the region and our dealing with the rise of China in our region.
So, PK, when you look at this and you look at the bigger story of Labor trying to show and trying to re-engage with the Pacific, keep China at bay in our regional neighbourhood. What's happened today really tells that story, I think, most dramatically. Remember in the 2022 election campaign, or just before that 22 campaign, when Albanese was opposition leader and Scott Morrison was still prime minister, and the Solomon Islands announced this secret security pact with China. Labor went in really hard. The Morrison government had dropped the ball in the Pacific. China was getting in with a security pact in our backyard. This was used to devastating effect by Penny Wong, Anthony Albanese and Richard Miles at the time. Here we are now, the new Prime Minister, Michael Wale. He was the opposition leader back then. He is more hawkish when it comes to China. He did raise transparency concerns around the Sogavare security pact with China. So now he's prime minister. His first visit, 2 weeks after being put in the job is to come here to Australia and announce in the courtyard with Anthony Albanese, the Prime Minister's courtyard, this new security treaty with Australia that they're going to negotiate. And he was asked about that one with China that he's inherited, whether he's been able to have a look at it. I don't know if you saw what he said. I thought it was amazing. He said, look, I've had to remove certain people from key positions. I haven't been afforded a copy of that until the day before I left. So he's only been there a couple of weeks. I had a quick look at it, haven't had a good look at it. I think he said I've been praying and fasting about it. The cabinet will have a good look at it and work out what to do. So, yeah, it was just amazing. The shift from the China Security Pact to now a new treaty with Australia is exactly what the Albanese government wanted to show off today.
Oh, 100%. And it's just, it is actually, if you are concerned about, you know, this superpower and its sort of influence and expansion in the region, this is a good outcome. It's a good outcome for Australia. And I think that the announcement, obviously there's more detail to come, but I just think it's hands down a positive announcement for the government.
And it fits with, you know, what they've done with PNG, Tuvalu, a Fiji treaty is being talked about, you know, Vanuatu as well has been a little bit trickier. But this pattern now of treaties in the region, and we heard the Solomon Islands PM also say that he thinks region-wide there should be an agreement that we look after security, and that includes policing, within the region, as in not with China.
Mm. Final little thing I'd like to mention on the pod before we get on with our days and do some other things. Pauline Hanson has been booked for a leader's address at the National Press Club. Now, she obviously said yes when they approached her, and this is all happening in about a month, I think, David. But, you know, worth noting, this is an address that's going to come before. I'm sure the invitation has been issued to Angus Taylor, but I don't think he's addressed the press club.
I hadn't seen that news peak, and I'm glad you mentioned that, and I'm glad Pauline Hanson's doing it. I sat on the press club board for some 15 years, and I know what it's like trying to negotiate getting leaders in particular to come and appear. Some of them are more reluctant than others. Peter Dutton famously wouldn't do it for a very long time, and I think he did the pre-election traditional address, and Angus Taylor's kind of adopted a similar approach. But Pauline Hanson, when we talk about moving into the status of who is the real opposition, I'm not going there, but I saw Sally McManus say that to you yesterday on afternoon briefing, that she reckons Pauline Hanson and One Nation are the real opposition now. That's just one of those little markers, right? Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I thought that was actually quite significant as a pretty significant figure in the Labor movement. Obviously not a Labor politician, but the leader of the ACTU is a pretty influential figure in the Labor movement.
Yeah.
Saying it so blatantly, I've spoken to other Labor people who are saying it a bit less blatantly, but privately are saying this is really who we've got to take on. A lot of people think the Liberals are finished. Now, I'm not quite, as I've said before on the pod, I'm not, you know, I don't think the funeral's been had yet. I don't think we're there, but the patient's very sick. And that's clearly the coalition story. However, Pauline Hanson is absolutely on the ascendancy. And so her addressing the National Press Club in that kind of leadership mould is really significant. It also platforms her, can I say, and I'm not critiquing the decision. I think, you know, you respond to your times at all, but it really platforms her as a leader, David.
I think, and look, important to note that scrutiny and transparency, there's, you know, a growing question mark about whether Pauline Hanson, her policy positions are getting the sort of scrutiny they should get. They certainly don't get as much as the major parties get. So this is a step on the path towards that greater scrutiny, fronting up at the National Press Club, taking questions from the journalists in the room. That's a really good thing to see.
Yeah, the questions, can't wait for that. But of course, you know, with the press club, you get the speech and then the questions, and I watch both, but I won't lie, it's the questions that I stay for. That's it for politics now. Thank you so much, David.
Thanks, BK.
Fran and I will be back for the Party Room tomorrow, and we're doing a special edition of the Party Room 2 this week, a Question Time edition. If you've got a question, send them. We prefer the voice notes, but whatever you like, to thepartyroom@abc.net.au. See you, David.
See you later.